Hey, what's up, Dutch Nation? Today on the podcast, we've got my dear friend, Mr. Daniel Jeremiah. He just got back from Vegas filming some content for us for Life is Beautiful. The man has some very rich Dutch history. He managed for a little while. I was privileged enough to work beside him for about 3 years here in DB Studios. Just a wealth of knowledge and a super creative guy with a lot of heart and a lot of passion. We talked a long time, as I often do, so this is going to be a two-part episode. We're going to dive into not giving into the pressures of comparing yourself to others in this first episode and talk a little bit about his Dutch journey, and then the moment that he got some good personal advice from Mr. Gary V. So sit back, relax, enjoy part one of the Daniel Jeremiah podcast.
Ladies and gentlemen, let me just say, Special guest.
We have a legend on the couch.
Former Roseburg Graveyard guy.
Yep.
Roseburg manager.
Yep.
Former in-house DB Studio content creator.
Come on.
Former DBXP podcast co-host.
Come on.
Keep it coming.
Former social media director.
Let's go.
Former marketing director. Oof. And current freelance filmmaker.
That's right.
And beat maker.
No,
he's got
right
a beat
now.
For us. Daniel Jeremiah, ladies and gentlemen.
Okay,
Daniel
Jeremiah. So I'll just to give you some context, I love making music. I like doing creative things. Mm-hmm. I haven't done it for so long because I used to do it to like make music. Like I wanted to make songs. And then when I was like, well, I'm not really doing that, so I stopped.
Yeah.
But I forgot how therapeutic it is to like just sit and work on a beat. Now, West Coast style hip hop's by far my favorite.
Come on.
And I'm just gonna play it a little bit for you guys.
Come on.
Dude, sneak peek.
Oh,
you ain't ready, man.
Come on. Okay.
Feeling it. Is that you, dude? Tickling the ivory?
Ooh, okay.
And just wait for it. There's some like... Yeah, there it
wow.
is.
Wow. Dre.
Come on.
Oh, that's, my goodness.
Hey.
All right, give it up. Yeah, a little Warren G-ish.
A little Warren G-ish.
It feels very feel-good, summertime,
G-funk.
That's right, man. That's right.
I literally thought I was about to hear Nate Dogg.
I would have been okay with that, with throwing a little the Warren G. You know, that's what I was raised on, man. I didn't listen to anything that wasn't like West Coast G-funk hip-hop until I met my wife. Anyway, yeah. Sorry, man. Thanks for the intro. That was nice. I forget sometimes that I've done a lot of things with Dutch Bros. I still do, man. I still do, which is really cool. I'm glad I was able to keep that relationship alive and still make content for Dutch Bros. It's by far my favorite type of content to make, you know, so I'm just glad I'm able to do that. I mean, I just kicked it with Shane and Life is Beautiful in Vegas for a few days, and that was just bananas.
Unreal.
Talk a little bit about that experience. These guys went to Life is Beautiful, which if you haven't heard of that, it's an amazing festival. I can only assume. I haven't been.
Yeah. 3 days of just music, and but like it's not your average festival. Like a little something for everybody.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Because when you think festival, especially nowadays, you just think, oh, that's just EDM.
Right.
It's like, no, like French Montana, Tyler the Creator, Travis Scott, like these rappers, The Weeknd, you know.
And then like Florence and the Machine.
Florence and the Machine, Cold
like
War
that.
Kids.
Yeah.
Yeah, there was definitely something for everyone. I mean,
T-Pain.
T-Pain. By the way,
amazing.
I'm a 30-year-old man here, 32, almost 33.
Yeah.
T-Pain embodies my years of youth. And like, dude, he performed. And I forgot his library. Like, not only does he have hits, he was also like feature on it. So many hits.
Right.
So he was able just to play banger after banger after banger, and it was the best show. People were so stoked.
Yeah.
But anyway, man, yeah, Life is Beautiful. It was really fun. I liked it. I've never been to a festival, period, so I don't have I don't have context for any other like Coachellas or anything else.
Yeah.
But what I will say is it was very apparent that the people who run Life is Beautiful had the safety and the, I guess, like caring that everybody was having a good time in a positive way at the forefront, which I appreciate it because, you know, I'm, again, old man at a festival. But it was like, it was the best time, man, and everybody was super cool, and there was a lot of good food. There was
amazing.
And, you know, and it never ceases to amaze me whenever Dutch Bros goes to an event that whether they already are popular at that event or not, it takes over almost instantly. And,
yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, my gosh, when I got there, The line was insane, and it never stopped. Never slowed up.
There was three stands. Well, we had the Transformer unit by one of the stages. That's for like general admission. That's the one that everyone could get to. Then there was a VIP one, and then there was a artist hospitality one.
Yeah.
But the line for the Transformer was stretching longer than any like bar line, any food line. Like,
wow. Yeah.
Crazy.
I was in the back, the very end of the line, kind of filming some stuff. And this lady walks up and sees the line that's wrapping so far away that you don't know what the line's for. And she goes to the person in the very back. She goes, "Hey, what's this line for?" And the guy was like, "Oh, it's for Dutch Bros." She goes, "Oh, that makes sense." Which makes you kind of feel like, oh.
Yeah.
Like, she's like, oh, yeah. Like, of course, because that line's always huge because they're freaking killing it.
Yeah.
And then the thing that was wild on top of that was I was talking to Josh Hayes, who was kind of helping oversee that Transformer. They said they were from the back of the line to getting your drink was like 8 minutes. They had to be pumping out drinks at a pretty amazing rate to be able to do that.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a limited option. I mean, it's like a lot of blended, a lot of iced. It's like Rebels and stuff. But still, in the context of things, like this line was stretching maybe 35 yards.
Maybe that's why they looked at me weird when I said I wanted like an Americano with a Cubano shot. With I'm just kidding. I didn't do that.
You guys got fireball shots?
I'm like, oh, man.
Life is definitely beautiful.
Awesome. Yeah. Well, we're all pretty peanut butter and jelly.
It was an amazing time, but I'll say my age is starting to set in. Like, not in the way where I'm like, I'm too old for this. Not like that.
You youngsters don't know music.
We didn't even go see DJ Snake, which was one of the people we wanted to see. Like, it was like on our list, you know, because when we looked and it was like, dude doesn't even go on till midnight. I was setting in because of like the habits I have now, which is like, you know, rewind the clock a little and I would have been like,
all about
no problem. But we were like heavily evaluated. We're like, I don't know if it's worth it. We're gonna be tired, like, you know, all that. So it's just a funny thing, man.
You did that with The Weeknd too, didn't you?
Yeah, we bailed on that one too. We missed most of the headline ones.
You know, shout out to Sarah and the Nimmers and everybody holding down Vegas.
Well, Sarah and Trav Harper, they too.
Yeah,
they hopped into the artist hospitality tent for a little bit during the like a brunch thing. And they stepped in.
The first thing we want to know, because this is something that we'd like to start off with, but we hear the beats.
Yeah, it's an answer that has changed already.
Good.
It changes for everybody. It's the natural evolution of things. So what was your first coffee that you drank as either a new hire or a customer? And what do you currently drink?
Oh, yeah. When I started, my buddy out of Roseburg, his name is Jonathan Doyle. He was working at Dutch Bros, and I wasn't. I was doing the vending side for Coca-Cola, filling soda machines.
There we go.
In the summer. I was just like so exhausted, and I never had had coffee in my entire life. I didn't drink it at all.
Pure Coke guy.
And I was, just soda. And I'm like, you know, it's like.
He's a company man, you know.
But the thing was I was like, dude, I had to wake up at 3 a.m. To start dropping soda in the machines, man. And so I was like, hey, like, you're a Dutch Bros. Like, I don't like coffee. What can I have that's going to like get me rocking, you know? And Red Bull at the time, it wasn't like at the forefront. It didn't have the same style that Rebel has. It was just kind of like, if you don't like coffee, like, this is here kind of, you know, on the side.
Yeah.
And so he was like, dude, I got you. Rolling in the morning, I'll be there. Come in and I'll make you something. And he made me just your standard, man. The caramelizer, basically.
Yeah.
Extra caramel. Blended, and he didn't stir in the caramel. And
so you got the chunks.
So he goes, if you can taste coffee in this, you have a problem, because there's no way there should be any coffee coming through. I've doused this baby with caramel, you know?
Yeah.
And I tasted it. And of course, like any normal, sane human being, I was like, this tastes like dessert. This is delicious. And I got addicted. I got hooked to it. And I drank those for a little bit. Probably shouldn't be pounding this much caramel every day. And so then I kind of switched over to like an iced caramelizer.
Caramelizer. Sweet chocolate milk in there.
And then I got hired about 4 to 5 months later for Logan Martin. Shout out to Logan Martin. Love you, dude.
Back when he was in Sutherland.
Yeah, Sutherland. Yeah, that's where I started, and I worked graveyard. And I kept drinking that, and then I'll never forget, because Logan gave me such a hard time about it. I had worked a grave shift, and he came in, and I go, dude, I got a drink for you. You got to try it. I mean, everybody does this. You know, you make your own concoction, right?
Yeah.
I'm like, Annihilators are good, right? Dude, have you had it with white chocolate? Bro, it's so good. I was like, I thought I like invented something. And it was like, yeah, dude, literally everybody gets that. I'm like, oh, man. So then I drank Ice White Annihilator. Then it went to like half sweet Ice White Annihilators to Ice Annihilator to Latte. And like everyone else, now I'm like 8 ounce black. Sometimes 8 ounce Americano with like a little bit of cream. Usual journey.
The coffee taste took over.
Yeah, the usual journey. You know, you just slowly kind of work yourself into it.
All the time I've known you and just knowing a little bit about your past, you're very ambitious. So why don't you talk a little bit about Dutch Bros, just becoming even a manager? Like, how did that go about?
Yeah, yeah. It's always kind of funny because, like, talked about it in my vlog, but that a lot of people, especially in the Dutch Bros world, have viewed me as that, as ambitious or like I go after it. And it's always funny because I always feel like I'm a super lazy person at heart. Like I'm just trying to find the path to laziness, you know?
Yeah. I don't see
that. And it ties to when I became a manager, which is even when I became a manager, I was still very much like doing it because I needed to do something important with my life, not because I knew what I wanted to do. Right. And so I guess what I mean by that is I was like, okay, well, I'm working at Dutch Bros graveyard and I'm doing stock. When my family and my wife's family asked me, like, what I want to do with my life, I should probably say that I want to, like, become a franchise owner for Dutch Bros. That feels like it has a future.
Yeah.
I should probably say that, you know, even though in my heart, I'm like, I don't want to own a business. Like, yeah. And it's not for everybody. Franchising is not for everybody. Operating is not for everybody.
Yeah.
But it sounded good on paper. I felt this pressure to, like, say that. So I was doing everything I could to become a manager. And when I became a manager for Clayton in Roseburg, I never even worked afternoons or mornings.
Yeah.
Ever. Wow. I worked nights in graveyard and then he made me manager and I worked my last graveyard the night before we opened the new stand and I went and worked the grand opening and opened every after that as a manager. So Whoa. It was like it went like
sleep
like
schedule
literally had to flip. Yeah. And yeah, man, I mean I managed for a few years and just being honest with myself, it just wasn't my lane. Like it wasn't my sweet spot. I wasn't stoked with what I was doing. I definitely discovered that I didn't want to franchise or operate, you know, I didn't want to do that. And so I was like, how else can I bring value? How else can I do something where I'm actually going to be happy? We had this like unused Facebook page and Instagram page. And I was like, hey, Clayton, like, do you care if I just run that stuff? Nobody's doing it. Can I do it?
Yeah.
And he was like, yeah, go ahead. I don't care. Like, it was kind of like back then it was kind of like, does not matter. Like nobody cares what you're doing there.
Yeah.
So I did. And I started making videos and oh boy, those videos are still on the internet.
is this the timetable of the pumpkin pie shake?
So the pumpkin pie shake was like the pinnacle of that stage. That was like the best thing I'd ever done, which was one of those back then I had the problem of like, not should I do it? It's because I could do it. So I just did, you know, sure. I wasn't thinking about it. But no, the first couple of videos were pretty brutal. But the turning point in my life, I put heavy weight on this because it was the turning point. One YouTube comment. We launched Rebel.
Yeah.
And on launch day, I went around to all the stands and I filmed them like serving it up.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Made a video, posted it on the Dutch Bros Roseburg YouTube channel, and Dutch Bros TV commented on it.
It was Phil Young.
At the time I didn't know it was like just him. Like he was the only video guy here at HQ. And he commented and said, hey, great video. Would love to use some of the clips for like the main Rebel video.
Yeah.
I literally went home and was like, hey, babe, pack your bags because we're about to go to the next. Like, I was like, life had changed in that moment. And Phil doesn't, I don't think, I've told him multiple times, but I don't know if he really, like,
knew the magnitude
like,
of
knows
that
the
comment.
Magnitude of what that meant. And at the time, what he told me when I told him that story was he was like, that's really funny because, dude, I was actually just sending that message because I was hunting for footage. I was hurting. I needed content so bad and you just had some. You know what I'm saying?
Right,
so, and I actually, if we've got time, I've got a very funny short story that kind of pairs with this a little bit that happened to me yesterday. It's unrelated to Dutch Bros, but it didn't matter what his intention was. What mattered was how I received it.
Yeah.
Right? So like I got the message as we need your footage.
Right.
Because what you have created
is
so good. And it built confidence in me. Yeah. When in reality, if you go watch the video, like there was no confidence that should have been there. Like I still had a lot to learn, all that stuff. But it didn't matter because it added passion to what I was doing. I'm like, I loved making that. I had such a blast making it. And I'm getting positive recognition for it. And it like put me on a path. Right. That's why it was a turning point for me, was because for the first time, I had never been paid once to make a video ever. I was doing that in my free time because I wanted to. Yeah.
Enhancing your own skills.
And so to hear someone official at a business say, hey, we loved it. It was a turning point in my brain. Yeah. The short little tangent story I'm going to tell you happened to me yesterday.
Yeah.
And dude, I'm still hurting on over it. Okay. So we have this video of me when I was 3 years old in Roseburg. It's called Ricketts Review. It's like a talent competition.
Yeah.
I told my mom, like, yo, I want to do it.
Yeah.
And I want to dance to Michael Jackson's Bad. I was super adamant about it. Mm-hmm. My mom made me like a Bad jacket with glitter, like the whole deal. And I had like the glitter socks, which the whole thing, right?
Right.
Yeah.
And I'm just going to be honest, I killed it. I went out there and I was like moonwalking and spinning. And 3 years old, you don't have to be able to do it well. You just gotta, right. you just gotta be out there yeah. doing something. Yeah. And the crowd's losing their minds, right? And it's on video. You can see it.
Yeah.
I have this trophy because I won Ricketts Review. Everybody's in this thing, right?
Sure, yeah.
So for my whole life, I've talked about how I won a competition when I was three. Oh, no. And I have this trophy at home and like how good of an experience it was. And I like used it sometimes with like my new girlfriends when I was a teenager, where I'm like, you gotta watch this video. Your boy
won
a day. Look at me, I'm out there
killing. I'm a child
it.
Prodigy, I'm
like,
baby.
And here's this trophy. Like, check it out. And dude, I found out yesterday.
Oh no.
I was visiting my family.
Your and, mom bribed the judge.
My mom started talking about the video and pulled it up because she found it on YouTube because she had uploaded it to YouTube a long time ago.
Yeah, yeah.
And we watched a little bit of it. And my aunt goes, you know, we still think that you should have won. And I literally was like, wait, what?
What do you mean?
What do you mean?
What do you mean?
There was so much deception, my friends. My aunt, they made a fake trophy.
Oh,
not only
gosh.
Did I not win, I didn't place. It was nothing more than a crowd that thought a three-year-old was cute dancing. Yeah. Like, no accolades, nothing. I didn't even get a participation thing. Like, there's no evidence from Ricketts Review that I even performed.
Existed.
And I've got this trophy. It says... Daniel Jeremiah, best three-year-old dancer. It's totally fake.
You're like, oh, what a specific category.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess the reason I'm bringing that up is one, because I'm still hurting about it.
Yeah.
But two is because it's a similar thing. Like,
it didn't
it
matter.
It built confidence. Like, no yeah. joke. Yeah. I used that as confidence sure. where I'm like, dude, if three-year-old me can go out there and win a dance competition. It built this confidence. And I think that it's interesting. Sometimes that can twist into entitlement if it's like everything gets handed. But I'm like, but for me, I used it as confidence.
Yeah.
And it's all just been a lie. It's been a lie. Anyway.
Yeah, that is funny. That's very delicate. That type of thing can potentially backfire.
Yeah.
And then you're the kid that needs to get presents on the other kid's birthday and
totally.
All that stuff.
Totally. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Have you not seen my dance performance where I won and I beat adults? Like, yeah.
That's pretty
but,
funny, though.
To back to kind of to your question about becoming a manager, ambition, and all of that. Yeah. It's just something that I cared a lot about and I talked a lot about when I was at Dutch Bros, and I feel the same now, which is... It boils down to your passion for sure. Mm-hmm. And the only thing is I'm like, I've been kind of changing how I talk about that because it feels like it's too fluffy to say that because there's no real practicality there, you know? What I'm really big on right now is knowing what you want, I think sometimes feels too big for people that are younger. They're like, I don't know what I want.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's okay. I think what you have to do though is wherever you are now, choose a direction. Choose a lane, choose whatever is floating your boat, and then give it your all. Yeah. Because when I started down a path of creativity, I thought I was going to be the next, like, Dre. I was going to produce music.
Yeah.
So that's what I wanted to do.
Yeah. Hey, now, you still
with
might.
This,
we
with
heard
this new
beat,
I might be on my way, but I don't know. You know, I went all the way to the point of moving to LA trying to do that. I've never made a dollar making music, ever.
Yeah.
But the quest of trying to make that happen was what eventually led me to what I do now, which now I feel like I'm in my sweet spot.
Mm-hmm.
And not only that, the skills I learned with music have helped me exponentially with making videos. They're paired so well together. But at the same time, it's just like, don't sit around and twiddle your thumbs and say, oh, I just need to find out me and I need to find out what I want. No, what do you want right now? If what you want is to be freaking... a professional donut eater? Well, dude, head out and start smashing donuts. Well, I don't know, dude. Like, choose what you want and go. Like, it doesn't matter what it is because as long as you just keep on shooting in a direction, eventually the right thing is going to click. You're going to put yourself out there. I just think too often people get kind of like afraid to move. They get stuck because they're like, I feel the pressure to have a job that is going to have benefits and pay well, but I don't like the job, but I can't go do this because I won't make any money. It's like, just get out of your head, stop overthinking, and go. And the only reason I started taking those steps and having any ambition was because of all the teaching and coaching that came from the DB guys, you know? Kimsey and Brant and all those guys. Like, those dudes really helped me discover that I just need to take action, right? So go for it. And the other part of that is that it doesn't mean it's just going to be, like, amazing. Like, you're going to have tough days. It's going to be hard, but... as long as you're in your sweet spot and as long as you're enjoying at the end of the day what it is, you're just going to be able to tolerate a lot more. If you work at a crappy job and you cannot stand the work, the thing that I always have to think about is someone else, that is their sweet spot.
Sure.
The thing you're doing that you cannot stay, someone would love to do that. Mm-hmm. You need to get into that sweet spot, because if you're at that job and then something goes wrong, you're just going to be on a tipping point of just being like, I can't take it anymore. Yeah. And if you're in your lane, any pitfalls that come don't matter.
I think a lot of people feel so much pressure, especially like early to mid 20s, mm-hmm. have it all figured out and to be making money. And I thought it was really cool what Gary Vee was talking about. And essentially, like, you shouldn't expect to make money till you're like 30.
Right.
Too many people are like, oh, I just graduated college or whatever. Like, where's my entry level position that's going to pay me like really solid money and give me the 401k and all that? And it's like, that is out there. It exists. It's possible. But anybody right now that's like 20 to 29, I'm not saying like be lazy, but this is the time that you like figure it out.
I think it's experimentation time. And I the thing, if I could go back, my problem was that I wanted to grow up too fast. When I became 19, 20, 21, I was like looking to like add responsibility to my life. So I was like getting a car payment. There's nothing wrong if that's what you want. Great. But you should never do it because you feel like that's what you're supposed to do.
Sure.
And I feel like I agree with you is that if I could rewind the clock, I could have lived in a cardboard box when I was 20. Mm-hmm. Not anymore, man. Now I got responsibilities, other people who depend on me. That's not the same anymore.
Yeah.
And it's like, that is the time to sacrifice comfort, in my opinion, to really get out there and find the thing that's going to ultimately fulfill you. That, to me, feels like a true retirement plan, a true goal-oriented retirement plan, because I think if you're in your sweet spot, you've got no intention of, like, quitting. Yeah. You're not going to end it. You're not going to stop. Yeah. You're going to keep pushing.
Yeah. To piggyback off that, I just read, like, this morning, this article about this kid who started a Kickstarter for a hotel. His business is now worth like $3 billion.
Holy smokes.
And so being 23 and he's like 25 now.
Yeah.
So it's like when you hear that, like, oh man, like some people have it so lucky.
What am I doing?
But
he had a vision.
He had a vision. He worked hard, took chances. Mm-hmm. A Kickstarter, asking people for money, like, hey, invest in me because I know something's going to work.
Yeah.
You said the magic word, ask.
Yeah.
Like, don't be afraid to ask. You put yourself in a position of sort of humility and you're kind of vulnerable, but nobody expects anybody to have all the answers. Starting a Kickstarter, like, you're asking, you're like, I have this thing, I need help. Yeah. A lot of people want to back you.
This is just something else that's been on my mind a lot, but I think the other piece of that story you just told is that he had vision. Mm-hmm. Really what he had done was he set a goal. The value and the importance of setting goals, even if the goal you set a year later, you're like, that was a real dumb goal. It doesn't matter. What matters is that you're like taking the time and energy to set that up and to go that direction. Because I truly believe the problem is not that people don't know what they want or there's not enough options. I think it's that there's too many. There's too many. There's like, I could do this, 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 or this. Like, choose a lane for a while. And this is what Gary Vee told me when I kind of gave him my dilemma back when we hung out with him for a while. And it was like, I was all over the place. I'm like, should I go here? Do that? He goes, how old are you? And I'm like, at the time I was like 30. And he goes, dude, you are a baby.
Yeah.
Go do that for a year. And if you don't like it, do something else.
Yeah.
He made
it
seem so simple. And it was like, you're overthinking, which is also what I was talking about before that I've done. Stop overthinking and just start going.
Yeah. You make a situation bigger than it actually
is. Yeah. Yeah. A big one that causes some of that is this crazy amount of pressure in comparing ourselves to others.
Yeah.
Others who are our same age, others who are in our same circle of friends, others who are just online that we see. Yeah. And I'm not the kind of person that's going to like start saying how like social media is bad. It's not. I love it. It's got its place. The problem, though, is when the youth use it in a crazy way where it's based on likes and it's based on stuff, because I always approach things as like business. Like, I use social media for business. So I want comments and likes and stuff because I'm trying to get more content and my name out so I can get more work.
Yeah.
Right. My niece will post a photo and if it doesn't get enough likes in the first 10 minutes, she deletes it.
Yeah.
Basically saying like she's not popular enough.
Mm.
Yeah.
That's crazy to me. That's so sad to me that that's
it's where you're looking for your validation.
That's the pressure. And I don't mean, and again, I'm not saying like, so everybody should delete Instagram.
Right.
No, dude, no, but use it right. And you don't need to compare yourself to others. And also knowing that those people that are on those platforms that are killing it have the same freaking struggles you do.
Yeah.
Nobody's going through life like they show on Instagram. And it's funny because sometimes there's this talk of like how people show their perfect lives on Instagram. Mm. I feel like that's how it should be. Like, yeah. I'm not trying to hear your drama. Let's go on Instagram for positivity.
The good stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, the problem is, though, is when you go, so that's how they live their lives. They live it perfect. They're happy. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're in Bali every other week. Yeah. And that's just not true. And that can really mess with you at a time in your life when you're trying to find your lane. Yeah. That can be discouraging. And like, I guess my encouragement would be, man, don't compare yourself to others. Find the thing that makes you happy.
Totally.
Take the energy to just do something towards it, anything. And at the end of the day, it's like my favorite thing is just action. Just move. Yeah, move and go, and that's going to be better than sitting still. Nobody's going to come to you and be like, you know what? I feel like you've got untapped potential in this particular thing. Yeah. Nobody's going to do that. You have to somehow put it out there.
Exactly. Yeah.
All right, guys. Well, there it is. That's going to wrap it up here for part one. Tune in next week when we continue our conversation with Mr. Daniel Jeremiah. Take it easy, Dutch Nation.